Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Rural Voices. This month we are focusing on what makes a sustainable community. I had the pleasure of chatting to Anna from the Netherlands. She is a journalist who has investigated affordable rural housing for young people. She also attended our Rural Youth Europe GA in 2019, so I'm sure she will be a familiar voice to some of you. I also spoke to Pia from Denmark, who is the chairwoman of the Danish Eco Village Network. I'm also joined by a very special guest co-host this month. Find out who it is after this roundup of what's to come.
Mainly, it's I would say in a simple way that an eco community is a way to create a lifestyle which is sustainable both to humans and to nature.
Well, that was actually coming from a very personal experience as well, because I decided to come back to like the rural area where I grew up in. Directly after the GA.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Nikolai, welcome to Rural Voices. It is about time you featured on the podcast, let's be honest. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Dan. Happy to be here.
For anyone listening that don't already know you, there probably isn't many, but if there is, can you introduce yourself and say what roles you have held within Rural Youth Europe in the past?
I don't think either there's not many that not know me in Rural Youth Europe, because I think I've been to 13 events right now with Rural Youth Europe, and also been in prep team and hosting sessions during the events. Last year, I went out of the board of Rural Youth Europe. I've represented the Nordic Countries Group 3, and I have also been in the Danish 4-H board during my time in the board of Rural Youth Europe. Yeah, it's getting a bit nostalgic, because I still looking back at the work that I have been doing for the couple last year, but I'm happy to leave it with the new board, because they have an excellent board right now.
Yeah, exactly. And like you say, it is nostalgic looking back now that you've left the board. So let's quickly talk about some highlights. What are some of those standout moments during your time with Rural Youth Europe?
I especially have one. It was an autumn seminar in Austria. I get like goosebumps now because I'm talking about it. That was not my first event, but it was the best event I have been to. The level of participation in the sessions and also the social during the event was so amazing. I'm still talking that it's like, it was in 17, I think. So that is 4 years ago. And I still talk with the people I met at that time, and the area we was living in was so beautiful, so I will never forget that. But also the rally in England, where I had the opportunity to be in the prep team with the board, helping out and being behind the scenes and see how many people is working together to make this event happen, and being tired all the time, because you have to be in the moment and be helpful if someone needed. You cannot say no when you're in the prep team and you hosting the event. That is also amazing and an experience that I would recommend to all people do in the member organization of Rural Youth Europe. You cannot compare to anything.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. That rally was an experience I will never forget as well, and probably the most tiring week of my life. Okay, so moving on to the topic, today we are talking about sustainable communities. When you think of sustainability, what does that mean to you?
When I think about the first thing that comes to mind is the 17 sustainable goals of the UN. When I was in the board, I traveled to Sweden to meet up the young people of the organization Swedish 4-H, and they had a session about the goals from the UN, and I learned a lot about them.
Yeah, definitely. And for anyone that doesn't know about the UN Sustainable Development Goals, They are a collection of 17 goals that aim to provide a more sustainable future for everyone worldwide. Today we are focusing on goal 11, which is all about the creation of sustainable communities. So we'll be delving into what makes our communities, mainly in rural areas, more sustainable. And that leads us on to our first interview of the episode. I spoke to Anja Goitska-Britella. I hope I pronounced that right. She is a cultural entrepreneur and a journalist and has recently tackled the issue of affordable housing for young people in rural areas in the Netherlands. And here is what happened when I caught up with her a couple weeks ago. Well, hello, Anna. Thank you for joining me on Rural Voices.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Really nice.
So to kick off, can you introduce yourself and talk a bit about the job roles that you're currently working in?
Yeah, of course. So I'm actually like a cultural entrepreneur, I guess that's the way to say it, because I write a lot of things. So I write books but also articles, and I have a column in a newspaper here in this area, and I also work for a museum, so I make my own exhibition currently here in Friesland, the province that I'm living in. But I also work for museums in Amsterdam, Rotterdam, in the bigger cities, and yeah, I'm doing research. We have like a minority language here, which is called Frisian, and I'm working for a company that is like investigating how Frisians talk Frisian or if they don't, and that's what I'm doing research for as well.
Oh wow, so is that research for specifically for the museum, or is it more for your writing projects?
Well, actually both of it, because I'm always very interested in like the relationship between cities and rural areas, and I always tend to like, when I have to do something for a city or for a like urban area, I always tend to put something rural in it. So with my research, it's actually really specifically for Frisians and for the province here. But I notice already that I'm writing about it in papers, but I'm also trying to put it into museums as well, because it's something that is really close to me, and I like to put it out there as well, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, so you say it's really important to get that rural perspective. Can you say a little bit more about your own rural background?
Yeah, definitely. I grew up like in a very small village, but not even exactly in a village, because I grew up on a farm, which is not actually a working farm anymore, but it's like in between villages. So there's a lot of flat land around me, and we have the sea dike. I don't know if you know what it is, but yeah, that's like where I grew up onto almost. So it's really on top of the Netherlands, the most northern part. And yeah, that's something that's always in my mind when I write about things. And I like the way how cities work, but also how villages work and what they can learn from each other. And yeah, I think that's like sort of in my mind always, and that's how I work, so I put that in my work too.
Yes, keep representing the rural country kids.
Exactly.
Please. And this isn't your first experience of Rural Youth Europe, is it? You attended the GA in England in 2019.
Yeah, that was so nice, and it's so cool to hear like all these people thinking about rural areas and thinking about their own identity in rural areas, and talking to them about like differences, but also of course a lot of generalities that like pop up in normal conversations already. And that was for me personally a really nice experience to see what they, you know, how they feel about living where they live. And yeah, that was my that's actually what I remember most from visiting the GA.
So moving on to the topic of the episode, we're talking about sustainable communities. Recently, you wrote an article about the lack of affordable housing for young people in rural Netherlands. What made you want to write this article?
Well, that was actually coming from a very personal experience as well, because I decided to come back to like the rural area where I grew up in. Directly after the GA. So I don't know, it probably had some influence because I was living in another city in the Netherlands before that. And then I was very lucky to find like a really nice apartment next to my uncle's farm. So I was really happy with that. But then I got a boyfriend here and then we wanted to go to like a bigger place, but also again in the rural area. So we were looking for houses and the first steps were like already insane because we saw the prices and we were like, oh my gosh, we're never going to be able to afford that. But we also had like very typical wishes. I love historical things, so I would like to live in a historical place and not like a very new building. So our search options were limited as well. But then we found like an amazing old fisherman's house. And it was from 1872, I guess. And I was like immediately sold, and there was a lot of garden behind it. So we said, okay, we're just gonna try and see if we can manage to get it. So I called the broker and I knew him because I called him before for a house there in the same neighborhood as well. And he knew me, but then he already told me like, yeah, it's nice that you saw this. It was posted on Friday and I called him Monday morning very early because I really wanted it, but I didn't want to disturb him in the weekend. But then he said, okay, so there were 30 interested people already. So you're like last on the list right now because we've had so many reactions. And there were already at the same day on that Monday, there were like first buyers. They had the first option and they would have a look. And he said, okay, we're going to make a deal because I think it's very important that people from the places here, young people who want to stay and live here, get a chance. So we're doing it and you're being the second ones on the list. So if the first person, the first couple decides not to take it, then you can come with your boyfriend and see if the house is something for you. So we were actually already giving up hope because we thought, yeah, it's such a perfect place. We'll never be able to get it. But then he called again and he said, you're going to be second because the first ones, they didn't accept it. They didn't want it. So we could immediately have a look. And fortunately, the people who lived there, they said, well, we think it's very important as well that people from the area, young people, gets a sort of new energy into the neighborhood because a lot of these houses in the direct region are being sold to tourists or like for a second house and people from cities who buy everything. So we had like everybody on our side, but then we had to get a mortgage. Yeah, and then they said, well, you're very young, you're an entrepreneur, so you don't have like a loan thing you can show us. So that was very big problem then because my boyfriend started his own company in May last year, so he didn't have a full year that he could show. And then they said, it's going to be very difficult. We don't think you're going to get it. And that's when I actually wrote the article because I was really frustrated because I thought, this is just exactly what we want. And we're really trying to make it a beautiful house again. And we really want to make it work in the region and put our own effort into that region, into the village. And so we tried again with another bank, with another mortgage person. And I got her on the phone and I sent her the link of the house on internet. And she was like, oh, but I completely get it. I know why you want to have this house. And you know what? I'm going to do my best for you. And she said, we have to make this happen. So she was actually, again, a person out of, I don't know, 100 that you can find. But she was the best and she tried to make it work. And now it seems that like we're getting it. So it's next week we'll know if it's going to work or not.
Oh, well, I've got all my fingers crossed for next week. Hopefully it works out.
Yeah, I really hope so too.
You talking about early on, you know, the advice that you got was, oh, it would be brilliant if you lived here. Yeah. We need young people to be part of the community. You know, we're talking about the sustainability of communities. Without young people, there is no future of that community. What's sustainable about that?
Yeah.
Do you think this is solely a financial issue.
It's also a governmental thing, I guess, because everything is so much in like terms of computer says yes or computer says no. But if you're going to look at what makes like they're all afraid of shrinking rural populations, actually, but they're doing nothing to help it like thrive again. So that's exactly what you said. It's frustrating to feel like you want to help and you want to be part of the community again, but you just can't because there's no one that helps you when you have to make those first steps into like the housing market and stuff like that.
So what do you think is the answer then? What do you think at a political level, what could they be doing to support the likes of us looking for houses?
Well, what actually is interesting is that we have like a few small islands here in the Netherlands. They're like on top of the Netherlands as well. And they are called the Waddeneilanden. And you see the same problem there, but then the numbers, the prices of the houses are even much higher. So for young people from there, it's impossible actually to buy a house. But what they do there is that they give first options of houses always to ones who were born there. So that's kind of a good idea. But then on the other hand, the prices are way too high for starters, for starting people like me. So that would be one idea. The other is actually something that they have done for this January. So they just made new rules for that people who are new on the housing markets, they don't have to pay like the money that you normally have to pay when you switch houses. So they said, well, those taxes are not for people from 18 to 30 years old if they are buying their first house. So that's something that they already did to help like young people get started. But also they hired the prices for people who have already have like one house and that want to buy a second house. So they have higher taxes for them. So that's also a good idea because, well, what you see here, and I think in a lot of rural areas, is that like tourism and second homes on the countryside, which are for a season maybe full and for a season rented out.
Yeah, I can relate to this a lot. Second homes here in the UK, especially around where I live, is a really, really big problem.
It's really frustrating. And also, again, for the livelihood in the community, it's like it's killing, actually. I think it's very sad to see if there are so many houses that are uninhabited. And yeah, it's just... Mm. It's just sad to see that.
Yeah, exactly. And for your article, did you reach out to other people from other countries to see if they were experiencing similar problems?
Yeah, of course, because I was really interested if this was only like a Dutch problem or if it was something that would be in other regions as well. And I spoke to Polonia. She's from Slovenia. And she said that it was a huge problem there as well. And they have the thing that the government doesn't want to be involved with the housing market. So they have even like a way worse situation because there you see the same thing that like the people from the cities who sold their houses for way higher prices, they can buy an affordable house for them here on the rural areas. And that way people who are young, they just stand like with empty handed and they can't do anything. And I also spoke to one, she's from Germany, and she said that the problem wasn't that the government didn't do anything about it. So they had certain rules for like young people as well, that they didn't have to pay that much tax or something. But they had the problem that new housing or new houses being built that often wasn't allowed. And that's something that we have here in the Netherlands too, that they are very difficult with giving permission to build a new place or that's also a very big problem here.
Yeah, that is a really big problem here as well. And I do get that, you know, we live in amazing places, picturesque beautiful places in the countryside, but at the end of the day, we do need somewhere to live.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know what they have in mind in any other way, but I think this is the only way you can make people get back to your rural area or stay there. Or yeah.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for coming on and chatting. It was really interesting to hear your story. I hope you're able to get the house you want, and it was really interesting to hear that, you know, that we're all facing similar challenges across Europe. So thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Yeah, well, I like the conversation very much.
Thank you, Anna, for joining me on the podcast for a bit of a chat. I could relate to a lot of what Anna was saying in that interview. I'm not sure if there are similar problems in Denmark, Nikolai.
Right now, at the moment, I'm not into buying a house. So I'm happily renting an apartment where I'm living. But one of the things that I thought about when I was listening to the interview was that in Denmark, when you start up as an entrepreneur, as a young farmer, you're trying to build your own farm. It's hard to get the money. So if it doesn't, if it isn't in your family and you're not doing the legacy of your family to be the farmer, it's hard to start a new farm. And one of the things that we do in Denmark is the government is helping the farmers that want to make a new farm, borrowing money from the state instead of from the bank, so they actually can borrow like the 20 million you need to buy this farm, because we're talking that much money. But I also think one of the nice things that she mentioned was the personal aspects of it. It is one of the things that we do in Rural Youth Europe, is that we take something that is personal for us, some things that affect us, because we are the young people. And then we do something about it. And she actually did some things about it. She wrote an article about it. And I think that is so nice. And also that she mentions that she got inspired from the GEA to actually help into doing this article about it. I think that is so nice.
Yeah, definitely. Love that. And I think it's really interesting you talking about the role that the state can play in supporting young people. But I also think that it's interesting having this conversation during the pandemic. In the UK anyway, it's becoming more and more attractive to live out in the countryside, which is bound to end up driving prices up in rural areas.
And also that you mentioned also that the problem of second housing, like people buying the second house was not living there. We don't have that problem in Denmark. Because we have a rule, like if you buy a vacation house, like the second house, my dad and mom have that, they need to own that for many years to be able to move into that house for full time. So that is one of the things they do, because we have a lot of tourists in the West Coast. And right now there's a law that people from Germany cannot buy those house in the West Coast, because they are coming, when it's allowed, they're coming to visit the house, to visit Denmark, to stay at the coast. And the people from Germany is not allowed to buy them right now. And so we don't have the same problem, because you need, one of the rules is that it's helping that you have to live, to own the house many years before you allowed to move there full time.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear. There are things like that which show that the state recognises that there needs to be ways for local people to find housing, so that at the end of the day, that community is more sustainable in the future. And there are definitely lots of different ways of looking at how to make sustainable communities, which leads on to our second interview, Nikolai.
Next up, we have someone from Denmark. And since I'm from Denmark, I would like to introduce you to her. It's Pia Duus Jensen. She is a chairwoman of the Danish Eco Village Network, and she have lived herself in a sustainable village in Denmark. And here's the interview Dan had with her.
Hi, Pierre. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I know you are no stranger to Rural Youth Europe, as you have helped out at one of our workshops in the past. You are one of the chairwomen of the Danish Eco Village Network, which is what we are going to talk about today with our theme of sustainable communities. So what is your background with the Eco Village Network?
My background for talking to you is mainly that I've been living in eco-villages for the last 15 years in two different eco-villages here in Denmark. And Denmark has a very big network of eco-villages. I think we're one of the European countries with most eco-villages per inhabitants. And I recently actually left the eco-village to live by myself, with the advantages and disadvantages of this. And at the same time, joined the board of the Danish Eco Village Network.
So, for people listening who know nothing about the Eco Village Network, what is an eco village? What are those key principles?
You could say it's an intentional community of people living together. It could be smaller groups of maybe 20 people living in an old farmhouse or around an old farmhouse, or it could be bigger villages with up to, in Denmark we have up to, I think, 400 people in the biggest eco village, living in individual houses but having a community. When we talk about eco villages, we talk about we have like four main areas that we work with in the eco movement, but it's not that you have to. It's not a checklist that you have to fulfill in order to be an eco community. But we work with, of course, with environmental aspects. This is how you produce your food, how you build your house if you build your own house. You know, all this environmental aspects of how we live as humans. We talk about the social aspects, is how we live together, how we all can play a role in the society, and the community aspect. And then there's an economic aspect that could be sharing economy, that could be a low income life, can have many different approaches. And then there's a cultural or spiritual aspect, which could be very spiritual, or it could just be the awareness that you are connected with nature and with other humans. But mainly it's I would say in a simple way that an eco community is a way to create a lifestyle which is sustainable both to humans and to nature.
And as you said earlier, in the past, you yourself have lived in an eco village. You lived in the self-sustaining village in Denmark. What was it like living there?
This eco village where I've been living most of the time, the self-sustaining village, is very much focused on the environmental issues, but also on social and economic issues. So this means that farming was a quite big part of the eco village. Building your own house was a part of living in the eco village. In order to live there, you had to build your own house. That, of course, had to be an environmental friendly house. I built a straw bale house, for example, as well as many other families. So housing, food, transportation, waste management, and so on, were a big part of that community. But the social aspect was quite big as well. For example, eating together every day. Having working groups, sharing the community work between us. We didn't own a plot of land, each of us. It was a co-op. When you wanted to sell your house, there was a maximum price for the house. And everyone had to do voluntary jobs for the eco-village in order to maintain the different things that was going on. That could be taking care of the sheep or baking bread or restoring the common house or whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, this is a lot more than just housing. This is more of a lifestyle change, isn't it? And you talking about having to build your own house, grow your own food, it's really interesting because this is all stuff we kind of take for granted. Having to think about things like waste management, for example. How did you find that, being involved in all aspects of your life? How did that feel when you first arrived at the Eco Village?
I felt quite empowered, actually, because when you grow up in the city, at least as I did, I didn't grow up in the city, but like in a city-like environment, you're not used to like you just said, you take things for granted. You go to the supermarket to buy your food. You don't really know what happens when you flush the toilet. What happens afterwards? You don't really care too much about what happens to your waste after you put it in the bin, and so on. So suddenly having to create everything yourself, because basically what we moved into when we moved to the village was a plot of land. There were sewers that the village was 3 years old when we moved in. So there were like sewers and electricity and so on was established, but aside from that, it was just a piece of land. So you have to create everything from the bottom. So you get, for me, it was a feeling of empowerment that I could decide, okay, how should my house look like? Where should I put it? How do I want to have electricity? Do I want to have electricity from the local from the electricity plant, or do I want to create my own electricity? I could suddenly take all of those choices that are, you know, very, very basic. Actually to life, but for me it was very empowering to do that.
So what about young people then? We've spoken about it already earlier on in the podcast, but for the likes of myself, it's a really hard time to try and find affordable housing, particularly in more rural areas. Do you think the Eco Village network is an answer to this problem? Is this an affordable option?
Yes and no. In our case, when we had to build our own house, it was accessible. We didn't have any money at all. We were young and we were students, but it was only accessible because we had the skills to build our own house. I can see now that the people who move into the Eco Village and are buying a house in the Eco Village, all of them, they have money from selling a house in the city or something like that. So it's accessible if you have the skills to do something by yourself, but elsewise not.
Yeah, I mean it's a shame because a lot of people, and especially a lot of young people, are wanting to live, you know, in a more environmentally friendly way and really care about the planet. But wanting to live in that way doesn't really come hand in hand with it being economically viable. Some people just can't do that. So I guess that's the issue that needs to be addressed.
I think so too. But then again, I can see that, so I think people find their ways into it. So maybe they don't live in an eco village with a special house made out of straw and stuff, but they find other ways to live the lives that they want to live. Because I think it's a trend among young people that they don't want to get stuck in borrowing a lot of money that they have to pay the rent every month. They want more freedom in their lives. But for me, what makes the difference from living alone in a house like I do now, I'm not part of a community now, and living in a community, is that when you are a community, it's more easy to create those structures that makes you able to live sustainable. For example, a car sharing structure, or a food sharing structure, or a waste management structure. All these things that you don't, yeah, maybe in the beginning when you design them, think about it. How do I want to grow my food? Where should we have the vegetable gardens? Who should do this? The food that I don't grow, where should I buy it? What kind of food do I want to buy? Of course, there's a lot of decisions to make. But once you made all these decisions, it's just a structure. It's just something that happens. And you just follow them. You don't have to think too much about it. Whereas when you live alone, you have to make the choices all the time. Every time I go to the grocery store, I have to make a choice between buying meat or buying a vegetarian alternative. Because I don't have these structures, it's difficult for me to find someone to share a car with. To ask my neighbor if he wanted to share the car. And We are a couple, me and my husband and my kids, and they are a couple, them and their kids. And they're like, no, we need two cars, but you can always borrow our car. But, you know, I can't rely on that. So all these community things you can do in the eco-village, but you, of course you can also do them in a co-housing project. You can share your food, you can share your cars and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Even if moving into an eco-village yourself isn't an option, there are clearly still ways that you can implement some of those principles into your everyday life. Well, thank you, Pia, for chatting here on Rural Voices. And if anybody wants to find out more about the Eco Village Network, it's a global network, you can go visit ecovillage.org. So, Nikolai, are you going to be moving to a Danish eco village anytime soon?
No, I don't think so. Because when I listened to the interview, one of the things that you needed was you had needed the skills to build a house or you needed the money. And I do not have the skills. And right now, since I'm a student, I do not have the money to do it.
No, yeah, that is fair enough. But I think the important thing to take away from Pia is that there are a lot of the eco village principles that you can take away and apply to your everyday life.
When I heard the interview, there were so many good things that I can reflect on doing, and some of the things that I am doing right now and doing in my day-to-day life. But one of the things that I highlight when she's speaking this was that she felt more empowered while she was moving to this area.
Yeah, exactly. And that sense of community is really important and everyone working together in that community. I think it's also important to say that, as Pia mentioned, eco-villages do come in all shapes and sizes and different setups. It's a global network, so definitely check out the website to find out more. But I definitely think that that has helped us think about what a sustainable community can look like. Right, so Nikolai, it's been so great catching up with you and getting you on the podcast at last. What is next on the horizon for you, Nikolai, in terms of Danish 4-H, Rural Youth Europe? What is next?
The next thing is that I want us to travel again. That is the next on the agenda, and I need to visit friends through Europe when it's allowed. But this summer, I'm starting up my education in teaching again. So that is the next step. And I'm not in the board anymore, but let's see in 2 years if I'm coming back. That might be. I'm not done with Rural Youth Europe, but sometimes you have to prioritize yourself rather than something else.
Yeah, exactly. But we also now have it officially on tape that you'd consider coming back. Right, we have one more episode of the series coming up. Me, Aris, and past chairman of the board, Sebastian, are looking back on the series and having a chat about our favourite interviews and highlights from the first ever series of Rural Voices. In the meantime, to keep up to date with all things Rural Youth Europe, you tell them, Nikolai, what do they need to do?
You need to stay on the social media and follow all the pictures and all the fun things that they post on the social media, and look forward to all the events.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.